Part 2, Signposts of History. Chapter 4, A Foot in the Door. If God was to fix the messed up world, he had to start somewhere. He started with a man called Abraham. There had been lots of people around before Abraham, and God's love extended to every one of them. How he reached them, we don't know, but we can be sure that the God who is love did it somehow. But with Abraham, things moved up a gear. So that brings us to Signpost 1, Abraham, the man of faith. I suppose God could have revealed himself to anyone as a means of getting his foot in humanity's door, but it was Abraham who had the privilege. Abraham lived a couple of thousand years BC in what's today called Turkey. Like everybody else, he expressed his inner longing for God by worshipping his nation's pagan deities, until the one true God broke in on him and started to show him better things. Notice, by the way, that it's God who took the initiative here. Being love, he could never comfortably turn his back on the mess that the world had become, pretending it wasn't there. No, his love compelled him to reach out to his estranged creatures. He's always been like that and always will be. Aren't we glad? God revealed himself to Abraham throughout his long life as utterly loving and loyal. He also made him some seriously big promises. One of these concerned children. Sadly, Abraham and his wife Sarah had not been able to have children. It was a source of great sorrow to them, especially in a society where great store was set by the number of children you had. Then, when the couple were both well past childbearing age, God promised them a son. At the time, it seemed so outlandish that Sarah laughed out loud. But God wasn't offended at that, and he reaffirmed the promise, and Abraham believed him. Here's where Abraham showed himself a man of faith. If faith means taking God at his word, Abraham had faith. The Bible records that Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. That's encouraging. It means that even though Abraham was far from being righteous, that is, completely upright, his willingness to trust God's word ranked more highly in God's sight than his imperfections. God accepted his faith as the equivalent of total uprightness. And Abraham's faith paid off. God evidently gave the old man's libido a boost and rejuvenated Sarah's ovaries. The couple did the necessary, and 9 months later, their child was born. A son and heir at last, named Isaac. Better late than never. That's the first of our signposts. Take note of it. Remember, Abraham, the man of faith. We'll see him again later. Signpost 2, the sacrifice of Isaac. Sometime after this, when Isaac had grown to be a young man, something dreadful happened. At that time in history, human sacrifice was widespread. Child sacrifice in particular, which to us is horrifying, people then viewed as normal. As a man of that culture, Abraham came to the conviction that God wanted him to kill Isaac as a sacrifice, to prove that he valued God more than his own son. Whether that was God's idea is open to question, as we shall see. But God has always met people where they are, in their current cultural setting, with all the presuppositions this brings. We must never forget this when reading the Old Testament. So Abraham set off, along with an unsuspecting Isaac, to the mountaintop where the deed was to be done. That Abraham was a man of his times is evident from his willingness to go through with it. He must surely have seen it as undesirable, killing this longed-for only son born to him and Sarah in their old age. But he seems to have shown no sign of backing out. Maybe that was a measure of how deeply ingrained the most appalling of practices can become in society. At the moment when Abraham was about to slit the young man's throat, God intervened. An angel stopped the killing and pointed out a ram caught by its horns in a nearby thicket. Abraham took that and offered it in sacrifice in Isaac's place. But his willingness to put God first by doing what he believed him to be telling him to do was a mark of his deep commitment to this God. And we learn something about God from it all. He didn't want human sacrifices. Later, he showed that he didn't really want animal sacrifices either. But the move in this incident from human to animal was a move in the right direction. Abraham's ideas of what God was like were being developed. This incident is our second signpost. Remember it. Note the idea of substitution that's central to it. The intended victim was spared, and a substitute took his place. Now let's fast forward in history to bring us within reach of our next signpost. God continued to bless Abraham, giving him further promises. One was that he would become God's instrument to bring a better life to the whole of the broken world. Yes, the whole world. In particular, he would be the patriarch of a large family from which, somehow, the blessing would emerge to mend things everywhere. And that family would live in what later came to be known as the Holy Land. Sure enough, this scenario began to unfold there in the Middle East. Abraham's son Isaac and grandson Jacob both continued the relationship with God. Each received further insights into his character and his ways. As for Jacob, God took the liberty of changing his name, renaming him Israel. His sons in due course became the fathers of the 12 tribes that grew as the generations passed to become the nation that took their father's name, the nation of Israel. That nation, strangely enough, had its growth spurt in a foreign land, Egypt. This came about through the adventures of one of Jacob's sons named Joseph. As a cocky teenager, Joseph got on the nerves of his older brothers, who contrived to get rid of him by selling him to some traders heading for Egypt. There he was sold into slavery, where he had to grow up pretty quickly. In his distress, he too fostered his relationship with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He discovered in doing so that this God was giving him an unusual insight into people's dreams. He was able to interpret them with astonishing accuracy, verified by the fact that the events he predicted actually came to pass. This gift led, after many ups and downs, to his being summoned before Pharaoh, the ruler of Egypt, who himself had had a dream. He felt it was a significant one, but found his advisers and diviners unable to interpret it for him. And thus Joseph ended up in Pharaoh's presence, where God gave him the dream's interpretation. The gist of it was that 7 years of bountiful harvests would be followed by 7 years of famine. This rang true with Pharaoh, who, struck by Joseph's sharpness and character, put him in charge of storing up the grain during the first 7 years, then overseeing the dispensing of it during the famine. The famine duly arrived. It affected not just Egypt, but also the surrounding nations, including Israel, where Joseph's family still lived. When supplies of grain dried up, the news filtered out that there were ample supplies in Egypt, so the aged Jacob sent his sons to Egypt to buy some in. And who did they find themselves facing at the depot but their very own brother Joseph, whom they had treated so badly many years before? To his credit, Joseph forgave them, and with Pharaoh's permission invited the whole family to settle in Egypt for the famine's duration. This they did. But life there was comfortable, so when the famine ended, they stayed on. There in Egypt they prospered and had children galore, until it was no longer an Israelite family living in Egypt, but the Israelite nation. As time passed, their extraordinary growth caused a later pharaoh security concerns. If the Israelites decided to flex their muscles, he surmised, the Egyptians could be in trouble. The safest course was to nip the thing in the bud, which he achieved by imposing slavery on them. And thus Israel became a slave nation inside Egypt, crushed by hard labour and demanding taskmasters. Hold your breath. Our next signpost is fast approaching.